AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Good to be with you once again, still from the Rudy Luther Toyota Studios basement here in my house. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Let you know, we got a lot to get to today. We'll obviously get to all of that in a little bit. Brett Johnson here with us today. But also joining us right now to start off the show is the Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division for the Minnesota Department of Health. Chris Erisman is kind enough to join us again to talk about the status of the pandemic in Minnesota. Director, thank you very much. I appreciate the time as always.
Oh, thank you. Glad to be with you.
Glad to be with you as well. I want to start off with the good news here. This is the expansion of the vaccination, 5 to 12-year-olds. It sounds like, once again, very popular. The times that are out there are getting gobbled up pretty quick. A good sign here is a lot of people want to get their younger kids vaccinated as soon as possible.
Yes. I mean, we just for people who may have not been paying attention, the FDA approved this expanded use at the end of, over a week ago, and ACIP met last week to make a recommendation on Tuesday. So as of last Wednesday, we had kids in Minnesota between the ages of 5 and 11 who were getting vaccinated. And we've had a good interest and good uptake. As of this morning, I think it was 4,089 kids between 5 and 11 who'd been vaccinated at the Mall of America. And there have been some school-located vaccination clinics, and providers are ramping up to give vaccines. So we're really pleased that there are a number of parents who are really working to get their kids vaccinated in a timely manner.
As the rollout goes on this, can I ask the question about, with the lack of the government, the governor's emergency powers, has it been easier or less easier, or basically the same, to roll out this new vaccination for the younger kids?
I would say that in this particular aspect, it's been about the same. And the reason for that is because this is, you know, we are definitely recommending this vaccine. We're strongly recommending it, but there's nothing, you know, that's mandatory or anything like that about it. So it's not, for instance, like a mandatory mandate or a situation in which we're encouraging masking, but it's not mandatory. So I would say that the rollout went really well, even without that emergency powers.
Yeah, as you talk about recommending it, the study that came on out, which showed that even if you've had COVID and you have COVID antibodies in your system, that the vaccine is still five times more successful at staving off more COVID than actually getting COVID and having the antibodies. And which is truly amazing, because I mean, that's, you know, that the vaccines seem to be doing their job and doing their job fairly well.
Right. I think that particular study and that data have been really helpful and really important, because understandably there are a number of people who, you know, have the perspective that, well, I got the disease, so I should be good, shouldn't I? And so to be able to have data, you know what? Yes, you do have protection having had the disease, but it's not as good as if you would get vaccinated. And in fact, individuals who have had disease and then go on and get vaccinated have the strongest immunity of all. And so, yeah, even if you've had the disease, we still encourage vaccination, and the data really do support that.
It's also got to be somewhat frustrating that we still do have two counties. I think this is the numbers you released last week. Two counties in the states where we have less than 50% of the population of those counties vaccinated. And I understand there's a lot of reasons for some people to basically be reluctant to do this. But the numbers at this point, I mean, it really is frustrating. I guess, what has been the Department of Health's mentality towards communities like that? I mean, are you sending in more people? Are you bringing in more information? Are you having more community meetings where you're trying to convince more and more people to get vaccinated?
Well, I think the way I'd explain it is, in all of our counties, we have a really strong local public health system in Minnesota. So when we talk about public health in our state, we're looking at not only the state health department, which you oftentimes will hear from me or from the commissioner, and that's the state health department. But each county has a local public health department. And so they are very, very active in their communities in working to make sure they're getting the word out about COVID, about the value of vaccination, and then offering, vaccine clinics in multiple different ways and areas. But for some of them, in some of these counties, they face a really, really difficult uphill battle because, the thinking and the mindset amongst a large proportion of their citizenry is not geared toward accepting vaccination. And so they walk a really fine line between being, willing, available, providing information, and making sure that they are there when someone decides to choose vaccination, and, really making people angry by being too forceful. So our local public health partners are doing a really good job at the local level, but for some of those counties that you're describing, it's a really tough place to be because not only are they, working to promote something that many of their fellow citizens that they don't value, but they have to live in this community as well. And so, they're working really hard, but it is discouraging when we see some of these have such low coverage levels.
And I do understand the local county health officials and responsibility, but when you see, how many months have we had the vaccines at this point, and they still have had a heck of a time, less than 50% in two counties. Is it a case where the state health department can go into those counties, or do you actually have to be asked, or even if they do ask for help, there's limits on what the Department of Health can do?
Well, no, we don't have to be asked to go into the counties. Of course, if we were going to go into the counties out of courtesy, we would be working with our local public health partners. But we also have to recognize that, for instance, in some cases, I could go to a community, or perhaps I could give a message and it might make a difference. But in some cases, the community is really not interested in hearing from state government or the health department. And so it does make a difference to have local folks and to engage local leadership and local respected officials to help with some of that messaging. So, yes, we can... the state has educational campaigns and social media and all of those things that are out there. But we don't want to discount the hard work that's being done by our local public health partners. It's just that it's really difficult, and many people are not interested in changing their perspective. And so sometimes it takes something really dramatic to get them to have a different perspective.
Well, and trust me, I get challenged a lot on my show because I say, I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt. And now, as we have also seen in other studies, these long-term health effects that can linger with COVID, that can affect, major parts of your body for years to come. I think that the concern I have is that, there is not a, I don't know how you think there's really a counterpoint to what I'm saying. Don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. And you're like, I'll show you. And you're like, okay, really horse to warmer. All right. It's kind of one of those things where I've said this before, Director, you and everyone at the Department of Health, you've saved lives. You have saved Minnesotans through your work, through your advocacy, through your information campaigns, through your passion. You guys have done a fantastic job. But sometimes, as you kind of, you've expressed yourself, it does feel like you're hitting your head against a wall a lot.
And I don't want to suggest that we're not willing to keep putting the message out there, but we also recognize that we have to change our approach sometimes. Sometimes what may have worked in the past isn't working now. And in some cases, it may seem reasonable, and I agree with you. Everything that you're saying is completely reasonable, but sometimes that doesn't cut it for some people. Even if we have the science on our side, which we do, it may not be sufficient for some people's perspective. And we have to acknowledge that. We don't want to give up in providing them with good information, but we have to be creative and thoughtful about how we continue to make sure it's available to them.
Director Chris Ehrsman is kind enough to join us, the Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology, Prevention, and Control Division over at the Minnesota Department of Health. Director, as well, I want to ask you about a concern I have, and that is last year, Department of Health, the federal government, a lot of medical, organizations, the Mayo Clinic, many of the medical facilities and organizations within our town, in our state, all came up and said, things are going to get bad, October, November, December, and they did. Things got really bad last year. We're now into November. Today is announced the highest number, 4,253 new cases. This is the highest number of new cases we've had since last fall. As a matter of fact, I think it's the 26th highest daily count we've had. And that is now. That is happening as we are going on today. There are some things which just make fall tough. People are more inside. It's colder out, so you're not outside as much. Means more closeness and more, issues with people that might have coronavirus and then being in close proximity with others. How concerned are you now that we are out of the governor's emergency powers? How concerned are you heading into November, the holiday season, with coronavirus? Are we going to see, hopefully we won't see numbers like we did last year?
Well, I mean, we certainly are concerned because, as you said, I mean, this the number of cases that we reported out today is, I think, the highest number of cases in 2021, for sure. So it's a significant number of cases. And you're right, as we go into holiday season and gathering, that means that we have more opportunities for transmission. So yes, we are concerned. I think, however, that the public is at a place where they seem to be, taking this large number of cases in stride. Our concern is making sure that our healthcare systems are not overwhelmed and, continuing to track numbers so that we can be attentive to that. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, the holidays will be challenging, and so people want to, make sure that you're being thoughtful about, your gatherings and when you're getting together, that, you're getting tested. If you are getting together with people who are vulnerable, and certainly if you have a group that's fully vaccinated, that's the best. But still not a bad idea to get get tested, because we know that, the vaccines aren't 100% effective. So we could see our case numbers go up even more, and that's very concerning to us.
If I may go positive, negative as well on this. On the one side of it, off the top of your head, what the percentage of Minnesotans that are vaccinated is right now? I don't know what the latest number is.
Oh no, I can. I'll quick check, but
I know we're doing well on that level. And I mean, once you get up and you're getting into the 70s, I think it's 18 and older, we're getting into the 70s. I know the oldest percentage of population has done a fantastic job. That's a really good sign. I mean, that's going to help keep these numbers down. The more people that get vaccinated, the better it is for all us all. But as well, and something I know you and the rest of the Department of Health is keeping an eye on, is the ICU beds available has been very limited. There's one available in the very northwestern part of the state right now. I think there is about 7 or 8 in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metro area. In the south central part of the state, there's 3. When you're looking at car crashes, strokes, heart attacks, stuff like that, I mean, obviously, that's a very precarious position to be in. Is there concern, or is there talk, let me ask it this way, is there talk going on right now of having those emergency ICU units that we had last fall, getting them back up and ready to go in case we need them?
We aren't at that point. Our healthcare system is, managing. It's tight and they're busy, but they have been managing. And they do have emergency plans in place. So, they certainly can expand if needed. But it's not just beds, it's staffing. So in other words, it's having a trained healthcare provider that can care for patients. And that's part of the challenge as well. So it's not just having a bed available, but having a trained healthcare provider. I can tell you that overall, in terms of your question about vaccination, we are at about 60% of our overall total population with a complete series and 62.7% with a single vaccine. Now, just to keep in mind that, we have that whole under 12 age group that until last Wednesday couldn't be vaccinated. Minnesota is doing, pretty well with vaccination. But the challenge is that with Delta, we are seeing breakthrough illness, and we know that individuals who've been vaccinated, can be infectious. And so that just makes dealing with this new variant that much more challenging.
I think one of the things, at least it seems like, and I know you're still taking it very seriously, the schools. We saw a pretty spectacular rise in cases through September into October, but it seems as if, whether that's through mask mandates, whether that's through more vaccinations, more remote learning, it doesn't seem like we're seeing the number of cases. As a matter of fact, there was a school district in the southeastern part of the state that had to go to remote learning, but that was the first one I've seen in a while. It does seem like the schools have had a better chance of dealing with this problem as of lately.
Well, I would say that we are seeing a lot of activity in our schools, and it's actually much higher than we saw last year. So I'm not sure that I would say that we're necessarily in a good place. We're seeing a lot of activity in our schools, even now. So it has gotten a little bit more controlled, but we're seeing, more than we were seeing last year. So yeah, we're still a little concerned about what's happening in the school setting as well.
I will say I've been very grateful for the Department of Health. The reason I'm broadcasting from my house right now is I've had hip replacement surgery that I had to have done. I mean, it was that bad. And I've also earlier this year had a kidney condition that was undiagnosed that I came to light. And I had to go in the hospital. And, it's an appreciation which I've gotten this in the last year and a half, not only for the Department of Health, people like yourself, Director, who have done such a magnificent job. I have said this before, I'll say it again, you guys have saved lives, and that is such a wonderful thing that you have done. But the nurses, doctors, it gives you a better appreciation, because this is one of those things where I know, as you talk about staffing issues in the medical field, it's tough. But you guys, I can't tell you enough. I know you guys get a lot of grief. I know it gets hard sometimes with the news, but you guys have been wonderful, and I'm very grateful for all the work you have done.
And I think we want to make sure that people are aware that, the CDC guidance right now is still that pretty much in all parts of the state, they would recommend masking mm-hmm. if you're in an indoor public space. So, we can continue to encourage that. Get tested if you've had a potential exposure or have, been involved in a perhaps more high-risk activity. And certainly if you haven't been vaccinated, please do consider getting vaccinated. And if you have been vaccinated and you're in a group that is eligible, we would encourage you to get that. So I know some of those messages have been repetitive, but they're still pertinent, and so appreciate the chance to just come on and chat with you. So thank you for having me on today.
Oh, I guarantee you, my booster shot's already scheduled for December. I have to have it in December, but I've got my booster. It's ready to go. I can't wait to have my booster shot. I'm looking forward to this. Director of Infectious Disease Epidemiology Prevention and Control Division of the Minnesota Department of Health is Chris Ayersman. She's kind enough to join us today. Director, once again, thank you very much. Anytime you need time on my show, you've got it. And thank you very much. All my best to you and everyone at the Department of Health.
Thank you so much for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll take a break. Come on back. We'll get into the show. Brett will join us here in just a few minutes. We'll take a break right now. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. It's very nice to have Director Erisman on. Get vaccinated. Just get vaccinated. Yeah, I don't want you sick. I don't want you dead. We got a full Minnesota coronavirus update coming up here in just a little bit. Brett Johnson is, of course, working in the studio today. Hi, Brett. How are you?
Hello, hello.
Did you have a nice weekend?
I did, yeah. How about you?
I was okay. I saw, I don't know, the Trump impression, the new guy that does Trump on Saturday Night Live.
I have not seen that, no.
I don't know who this guy is. It's brilliant. It's brilliant. He does like one of those old game shows where they have to get all the words in and the statement that he's in. And it just is amazing. It's just amazing. Whoever that guy is, that is one of the funnier takes on him I've seen. Plus the Minnesota United, they basically, as bad as the sports are in this town, and I'll give the Wild credit. They're actually playing pretty well right now. But as bad as the sports are, especially the football is in this town, and in how I watched that Minnesota United game yesterday versus the LA Galaxy, because if they did not tie or win, they were out of the playoffs. They did tie because LA Galaxy had everything on the line. If they didn't win, they were out. So they were playing with, you know, some ferocity. The Minnesota United won in the end. Our goaltender was sensational. But I honestly kept waiting for the moment where they were going to lose that game, because I'm a Minnesota sports fan and I have been subjected to enough pain on this level that I just presumed eventually it was just going to fail. Yet they didn't. They're going to the playoffs. I'm very happy about that.
Give them time for the meltdown. What was it a couple of years ago where they had like a 3-0 lead in Seattle and then they gave up three goals in the second half or something like that?
It was not even that. It was like 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's right. Minutes.
Oh, yeah. That was a heartbreak.
That was their welcome to Minnesota sports.
There's your Minnesota sports team. Yeah, that's what it is. They'll get us to the point where we're going to win the championship and then they'll give up 5 goals in 3 minutes. And that will be the end of us. Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm not supposed to have any joy from any of this at any point. I will say this. I am not taking any of the heavy-duty drugs anymore. I shouldn't say that. I have to take something for the sleep at night, and I get a pill to prevent blood clots, because that's a big problem if you get hip replacement surgery. They get concerned about blood clots in the legs and stuff, so you got to be careful with that. But for the most part, during the day now, I'm just back to good old-fashioned Matt.
As opposed to the Matt we were getting before, I didn't notice
he was drugged out of my mind. that 5 days, the first 5 days when basically my hip was like, what did you just do to me? I was, you know, mother, is that you? Hello. I don't know what movies I was watching. I've been trying to watch while I've been on this little sojourn at home. I've been trying to watch the Marvel movies in order. I just got done with Ant-Man, so I'm up to, I think it's Captain America: Civil War now.
Wow, you made a dent in that.
Yeah, I did. I've done pretty well. And yeah, I got to tell you the truth, I can't remember most of those movies. Especially not anything in the first phase one. Not pretty much. It's like all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, apparently we beat the Loki in space. So, all right. And then I moved on, so... But no, I'm weaning off. I'm hopefully later this week I will be back in studio, which will mean we'll have the camera. Good news for you, or bad news, depending on your point of view. I have taken some photos. I'll post them up online here a little bit later on. One last thing I just wanted to mention over the news, and very tragic, the story out of Houston at Travis Scott's Astroworld Music Festival, where at least eight people have died, scores injured Friday night, because the crowd was just so crazy. It reminded me, and I know I'm much older than you, Brett, but I remember distinctly as a kid in 79, The Who in Cincinnati, where they used to have open seating. So basically, if you were the first at the door, you could do a mad scramble and get down to the front seats. And what had happened was, if I'm not mistaken, the doors weren't open completely, and there was a crush at one of the doors, and I think 9 people, or maybe it was 11 people, died in Cincinnati just trying to get into that Who concert. And the thing which is crazy is, we are supposed to have fail-safes And I got to ask the question. I mean, you had Travis Scott's, whatever Kardashian is, Travis Scott's boyfriend, a girlfriend. She was big. She had posts up online talking about, oh, look, emergency vehicles are trying to get the crowd out because, you know, and she was putting up posters. They had the crowd chanting, stop the show, stop the show. It took an hour after the first emergency call for them to realize, the people that were there to realize there was a major problem going on. How in the world did that happen, that no one seemed to be paying attention to the health and well-being of the people in the audience? I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, like security would pick up on that. Some lax measures that were taken, it looks like.
Well, there, you mentioned the security. There are people that were like climbing onto stages and saying to the people like running lights and stuff, you know, you need to get medical people down there. This is bad. And, you know, I don't know if they thought they were drunk or what, but, you know, Travis Scott says, and his crew and his representatives apparently have insisted they had no idea anyone was injured. They would have stopped the show immediately. To back up Travis Scott a little bit, there was someone that was apparently passed out in the front row, and he did talk to security saying during the show and say, get down there and help that person. But the fact that there were ambulances and stuff trying to get into the crowd, and, you know, I think at some point there it should have become apparent to at least the people running the show that something horrible had happened. And obviously there's going to be a lot of questions here. My guess is you will not see what happened there happen again in this country. I think that there'll be a full investigation. And if it's determined that at an open air festival that you can't just have this, they'll have it where they'll section it off and you can only go into your certain section and stuff like that. And that's going to be my guess is how they're going to have to go forward from here, because that was, like I said, it reminded me, you weren't old enough to remember The Who in 79, right?
I did hear about that, though, having a big, stampede, for lack of a better way of putting it. That killed a number of people. I mean, that's scary stuff. Yeah. I mean, you get down on the ground, you're pretty much out of luck if you fall in one of those types of rushes.
Oh, and it sounds like the crowd at these shows, and I've not been to a Travis Scott show. I know, big shock, big white guy, 53-year-old white guy from Minnesota, haven't been to a Travis Scott show. But it sounds like the crowds are notorious for kind of getting out of control. And I think that's whatever that's going to happen. When it happened with The Who, there was a full investigation. And the good news of that tragedy was that was the end of open seating. That was the, you know, a festival seating of run for the front. That was the end of that. From that point forward, you had to get a seat. You had a specific seat number. And they haven't had that problem, at least to my knowledge, at a concert since that time. I'm not saying there haven't been. Obviously, there's a case in Los Angeles or Las Vegas with the horrible shooting that happened out there at that concert and things. But as far as just general seating, and of course, you can bring up Woodstock 2. It went in 1999 when that thing was a debacle. But the reality is when it comes to the idea of just opening the doors and letting a mad, you know, bum rush of crowd go through the doors, we haven't had any problems like that, I don't feel, since that Who concert. So if I guess you can say anything, there was some good that came out of it. They changed up the policies enough to where stuff like this does not happen with any kind of consistencies. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. I got a ton of stuff on coronavirus update to get to, as well as other things. Your calls as well. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show on your Monday. Good to have you with you. Once again, we'll have that Chris Ayersman interview up on the SoundCloud page. Spotlight that interview. Find that on iTunes. Because one of the things we should mention here is we're getting into the part of the year where if you listen to us in the Twin Cities via the old terrestrial radio through AM 950, that we have to start powering down because, you know, science and stuff. The ionosphere condenses at night, so henceforth we have to kind of change our broadcast signal. And so when we do that, what happens is, well, it doesn't go as far in the metro area at times. It can be a little bit hazy. So lots of ways you can listen to us. You can go, of course, on iTunes. You can listen to us there. And on the SoundCloud page on am950radio.com, you can stream the show live there. What's the streaming app that we have there, Brett, the one that does it for us?
TuneIn.
TuneIn. Thank you. TuneIn. You can go to TuneIn. If you're on, as a matter of fact, if you have a smart device in your house, and this will blow your mind, you can say, listen to the Matt McNeil show, and it will pull up my show. That's wild, man. I did not expect that. I thought Alexa would go, ooh, no. But no, it does. And so you can get that off of TuneIn as well and listen to it on all your devices. There's lots of ways for me to touch you, and I'm ready to do it. Get ready for me all fall and winter long. Anyway, this is the reason why they don't let me do promos anymore at the radio station. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. All right, let's get into, since we're talking with the director from the Minnesota Department of Health, let's get into the Minnesota coronavirus update for today. 4,253 newly reported cases, 34 newly reported deaths. The state's COVID death toll now is 8,864. Among the new fatal cases, a person 25 to 29 in Isanti County. As of November 4th, the state reported that 3,486,879 people have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine. 3,324,363 people have completed the vaccine series. The state has administered now 523,905 third dose booster shots. Good, over 500,000 there. Through November 5th, the number of people with COVID and hospitalized in Minnesota was 990. That's up from 982 reported on Friday. Of those hospitalized, 227 people are in intensive care. 763 are in general hospital care. Hospital capacity is very tight in Minnesota right now, especially staffed ICU beds. The 4,253 positive test results on Monday's update were from 44,640 completed tests. That's a test positivity rate of 9.52. And the World Health Organization recommends people be below 5% for 2 weeks to keep the economy open. But apparently we're not even listening to that anymore. I did talk about this with the Director Ayersman. The 4,253 new cases reported on Monday by the Minnesota Department of Health is the most the state has reported in a single day in nearly a year. In fact, it's been exactly 11 months since the state reported more than 4,000 cases in one day, December 8th, 2020, when the department announced 4,004 cases. That was during the tail end of the fall-winter 2020 surge that peaked in mid-November. According to the health department records, Monday's report of 4,253 cases is the 26th highest total since the state reported its first case on March 5th. It's one of the 30 days of at least 40,000 cases, but it's the first time it's happened in 2021. Most of the cases reporting, the worst day was November 9th. That was 8,837. I remember almost being in tears that day last year. 8,427 was number two, 7,988, 7,612, and then 7,567. All of those from November of last year. November and December were where we had the most of the big cases of last year. And so once again, November 8th of 2021 is the first one to break the top 30 in almost a year. What's more concerning is that the Minnesota's test positivity rate continues to rise. According to the Mayo Clinic's COVID-19 dashboard, the state's 14-day positivity rate is now up to 9.8%, the highest that's been in 2021. The surge in cases, I want to remind everyone, we were down at, 1% positivity rate? We were down at like a 1% positivity rate. It's these idiots that just do not want to get vaccinated. And, you know, if it wasn't just one of the most selfish damn things, if you were just going to stay in your house and you weren't going to go on out and you weren't going to go to work, you're going to do everything remote, I guess fine. If that's where you want to go, fine. But it's no, it's, yeah, I want to go to my sports bar and I want to go get an ice cream sundae and I want to go out to dinner and I want to go out to go to a concert and I'm going to go to church and I'm going to go out and hang out with my friends. It's the selfishness that is the most insane element of this whole thing. You're just a bunch of selfish jerks that do not care about anyone else but yourself and your own self-pleasurement. And that is the most, part of this. I look at you and I say, I don't want you dead. I don't want you sick. I don't want you bankrupt for the rest of your life. And I don't want you to have a lifetime of health problems. And you look at me and say, I don't care. I want a six-piece crispy. And you're like, geez, really? That's where you're at? Okay. The surge in cases and positivity rate is happening in a time as hospitals and long-term facilities are stretched to the max due to high admission numbers and staffing shortages. The data on Monday shows there's a total of 48 staffed ICU beds available statewide, which is just shy of the year's low point of 45 set in October of earlier this year. I want to mention, too, that if at the very beginning of this entire thing, this entire pandemic, if we would have actually had good, competent leadership in Trump or anyone else in the White House, we would have had far worse outcome. South Korea followed the textbook principles of epidemiology. They kept deaths 40 times lower all the way till 75% of the population was fully vaccinated. And this is success. And you look at South Korea, and you look at how the United States and the UK have just because of they think that it's something that they can out debate or out scream or out or get a cutely little internet social media meme, and they can somehow beat coronavirus. And the reality is that you just, if you would have just done everything by the textbook principles, talked about minimal sacrifice, talked about taking care of the betterment of your countrymen, the betterment of your fellow human being. If you would have just had something like that in the White House at the beginning, well, things wouldn't be as bad as they are now. And the reality is, and I've actually come to this, I've said this before, I've come to the belief that I think the Republicans are trying to make as many people sick, trying to kill off as many of their own supporters as possible because they want this as a campaign issue. So they basically, they're the ones out there still bad-mouthing vaccines. They're the ones out there still bad-mouthing masks and chuckling all the way to the bank as they themselves have been vaccinated for months. They themselves have been vaccinated for months. As a story out, was it in California? The woman who was out doing all these anti-vax rallies, well, she's a teacher and she had to either, you know, sign on to a testing program or show that she'd been vaccinated or be fired. Well, all of a sudden she comes in with her vaccination card. She's been vaccinated for months and she's still there screaming about how no one should get vaccinated. It's not, when I see stuff like that, this is nothing about the vaccine. This is nothing about how safe it is. It's everything about political ideology. And that's all I can imagine now at this point. That's all I see right now when it comes to this stuff. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I got two more stories on this. I'll tell you what, let's take the break a little early here. We'll take the break. Come on back. I got a hoot out of North Dakota. Holy cow. But at least the guy's consistent. At least the guy in North Dakota is consistent. I'll explain what I'm talking about in just a second. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. You know, I've kind of been of the mindset that, you know, when it comes to people who are anti-vaccine, and one of the things I've said is this, is that, you know, if you're anti-vaccine, why is it that when all of a sudden you get sick, you can't, all of a sudden you're born again? Oh, the scientists, the doctors and the nurses, oh, they're all right. Now I need to go to a hospital. I mean, it was brought up with Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers quarterback, who is out this week because he tested positive for COVID. He was not vaccinated. He clearly misled his team and the NFL in regards to whether or not he was safe to be around. He clearly misled them. He says, I didn't lie. I said, well, maybe you didn't lie, but you really weren't being honest either. Let's be honest about that. And needless to say, as I brought up the point, and I said this is, you know, he talked about he's consulted with Joe Rogan. He's turned away from the doctors and the nurses and the scientists on COVID vaccines, and he's talked to the authority on medical professionalism, Joe Rogan, the former guy from News Radio, from what was the game show?
Fear Factor. Yes,
that's right. Fear Factor host, and now a streaming podcast, radio, whatever you kind of call it. Anyway, he consulted with him, and I said, "Oh, that's interesting. When the Minnesota Vikings broke your collarbone, did you go to the nurses and the doctors saying, you know what? No, I understand you have, you know, think you know how to deal with the collarbone, but Joe Rogan, he knows how to deal with a collarbone. I'm going to go to him." And I cut them off in the past. Before any person came up to me and said, "But Matt, collarbone repair is established science within the medical field." Well, so are vaccines, you idiots. The same exact science that was used on the collarbone is the same exact science that was used on the vaccines. So if he's okay with going to the doctors to get his collarbone fixed, well, then he should be okay going to the doctors to get a vaccine. But you see, this is the hypocrisy of it all. And of course, the second he's called out on it, he's all of a sudden,
"Why is everybody picking on me?"
I've said, you know, I don't agree with it as far as medical advice, but at least I'd respect you a slight bit more when you got diagnosed with COVID, you said, "I'm still not going to the hospital." Well, we found that guy. A North Dakota lawmaker and an organizer of a rally today to oppose the COVID-19 vaccine mandates is infected with the coronavirus and will not attend the event. Republican Jeff Hoverson posted on Facebook Sunday that he was quarantining and each day is getting healthier. The Minot lawmaker said he is taking the deworming drug Ivermectin, as a COVID-19 treatment. I don't know which orifice. We do not have a report on which orifice Jeff Hoverson has put the horse dewormer into. I don't know. Is it the mouth? Is it someplace else? We don't know. But he's proudly taken the horse dewormer. Let me unbuckle my pants. No, I have no idea which orifice he's using. I don't know. Is that on the directions? Do you have to do that to the horses? Anyway, but he's got his horse dewormer. He's good to go. COVID is real and like a really bad flu, Hoverson wrote. Hoverson, a pastor, man, Gospel of Matthew, Jesus was for healthcare, you fool. Anyway, Hoverson, a pastor, told the Associated Press he was diagnosed last week. "I'm feeling rough," he said Monday, "but this ivermectin is keeping me out of the hospital." No, fate is keeping you out of the hospital. Ivermectin is designed to fight parasitic infections, but conservative commentators have promoted it as a treatment for COVID-19 despite a lack of conclusive evidence it helps. "It's making me better," Hoverson said. The North Dakota legislator returned to Bismarck Monday for a special five-day session during which a bill to prevent vaccine mandates was most certainly gain approval. House Majority Leader Chet Pollard said Hoverson could participate remotely. He's staying at home. He's not going to the hospital. Okay, we'll see how long that goes for. My guess is going to be is that if this gets worse, all of a sudden he's going to become a born-again believer in the doctors and the nurses and the science. Woo-hoo! North Dakota's Republican leaders GOP Governor Doug Burgum have said they oppose such mandates, and the state joined a federal lawsuit challenging Biden's COVID-19 vaccine rules. Although Hoverson will not attend the rally in North Dakota State House, he says his three teenage children will be there. I want to make sure we put that in perspective. Dad's at home with a serious disease that could kill him. And and Dad is gleefully sending his children out to basically tell other people saying, "This is great. I'm staying at home sick as a dog. But this is great. You should try it." Don't tell me. Do not tell me that some of these Republicans are trying to sicken their own constituents. Finally, on this, actress and Minnesota native Laura Osnes, O-S-N-E-S, has missed out on another role because she refuses to get vaccinated against COVID-19, according to reports. Osnes, OSNES will no longer perform an Bonnie and Clyde in concert, a two-night event in London, a news release says. Laura, who played a Tony Award, who received a Tony Award nomination for her performance in Bonnie on the Broadway musical Bonnie and Clyde, was set to team up again with Jeremy Jordan, who played Clyde on Broadway in the sold-out London show. Instead, Frances Maylie McCann will be playing Bonnie in the concert event that runs January 17th and 18th at London's Theatre Royal Drury Lane. The news release did not specify why Laura was being replaced, but did say it's committed to following the relevant UK government COVID-19 guidelines, creating a safe working environment. This is the third performance Laura has lost out in elite recent months. Deadline reported she left her production of Crazy for You in New York in August because she refused to get vaccinated, then left the Disney Princess a concert tour after she didn't comply with the production's COVID-19 mandate for performers. She says that she's doing family planning. It's safe. The reality is here's what I think about Laura, is that you could get the head of the Mayo Clinic to sit down with her and go through every one of her so-called problems, completely refute them, show her the evidence that she is out of line, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, here comes some more problems I have. Yeah. Hour two of the show is up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Hour number two on your Monday. Good to be with you today. Hope you're having a good drive out there. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205 is the phone number. Brett Johnson, kind enough to join us. He's back at the studio producing. I'm in my basement of my house because I still am not recovered yet from my hip replacement surgery. Brett, how are we? Everything going okay over there?
Ed, everything's working well over here. It's funny how it works out. Whenever people broadcast on the radio, it's usually from the basement of some location.
Yeah, it's. I don't want people to see me. I actually did. I did a radio show once where you could, where you basically could watch what I was doing, and it just had a crowd that could walk by. I'm not a big fan of that, man.
Oh, you don't want the fishbowl broadcasting?
No, I'm not. I mean, like they used to do it. Cities 97 used to do that over at Butler Square, didn't they? They had they put their jock in the booth right in the skyway. I'm like, yeah, dance for us now. I'm not a big fan of that. So, although we do broadcast the show when I'm in studio, I still don't understand why would they, really? Okay, but yeah, me trying to question technology. That's just I remember when we used to ride horses. That sort of thing. So. Brett, yesterday I did get on out a little bit. I went out to Lake Harriet. I can't walk too far, so I found a nice little park bench. And I sat there and looked at some of the pretty colors and stuff. And we had actually heard I saw it on one of the Sunday games, an ad for Christmas stuff. And also you see a lot of ads out there. And I actually asked my wife the question, what it must feel like for someone who comes to America for the first time and to live here and is not Christian or is Christian for that matter. And they get here and they see how Christmas has basically encapsulates this country for two freaking months. And to actually hear people scream about a war on Christmas. I have to imagine they must be like, what would they do if it wasn't being quote unquote restricted? Because it is amazing to me. We have two fantastic holidays. Halloween is a great holiday. Thanksgiving is a magnificent holiday. And no one, it's almost like they're afterthoughts now. But people are like, yeah, we're going to have a day off. We've got 2 days to go shopping and we're going to have some turkey coming up here later Thanksgiving. No, Thanksgiving is supposed to be about giving thanks for all you got. And it's like, it's just steamrolled into, let's talk about how Santa's got a good interest rate on a lease. I'm not a fan, man.
Wonder if something has to do with the fact that now with COVID, a lot of stores aren't going to be open, as early as they used to be on Thanksgiving or Black Friday, that maybe they're making a bigger push now to try to get people thinking about Christmas shopping.
Well, that's an interesting question. Because I think that it is an interesting paradigm because a lot of businesses have taken grief for being open on Thanksgiving or being open Thanksgiving night or being open at midnight on the night before between Thursday, that Thanksgiving Thursday and Friday, and making workers have to miss the holidays. And so is this a payback now? Okay, fine. We will give our harshly treated employees, I'm going to only presume, we're only going to give them, we'll give them Thanksgiving off, but for this sacrifice to be made, Halloween's on the chopping block. Because let's face it, there are a lot of places where Christmas stuff was out before Halloween. And so is that, maybe you're onto something, Brett, is that this might be the reason why it's so obnoxious this year, it seems like, already, is because, you know, they're okay, fine, we'll give them some time off on the Thanksgiving, but that means we need to start our marketing campaign in, I guess, June. I will say this. If you're one of these people that's already got your Christmas tree up, more power to you. This is not about whether an individual within their own house does. It's just what's forced on us. And if I can say, I really am bothered by Thanksgiving kind of getting steamrolled here. And I've talked about it before, but, you know, maybe it's because I've had kind of a rough year on Thanksgiving that I have a lot to be thankful for. I have a lot to be thankful for. And frankly, I think there's a lot of people that do have a lot to be thankful for. That not basically falling into a realm of consumerism wrapped in a thin veil of religious holiday, that it might be good just to have a day where we have that. We set it aside. What we don't allow Christmas music to be blaring things out of control. What we don't allow, you know, Christmas ads to be running. That we basically say, no, it's important that people give thanks as opposed to a minor thing where people slow down just so they can go back out and shop or go back up online and shop. I remember, and I don't know, Brett, if you remember the story, I was listening to, I've got satellite radio in one of the cars, and on the satellite radio is a classic radio station, Radio Classics, where they play all the old radio shows. And I was listening to a Dragnet episode from December 16th of whatever year, it's like 51, 52. December 16th. And the guy Friday was made the point, we were out and we saw some early Christmas shoppers. And I said to I said, wait a minute here. That's a December, like that episode was like December 16th. And I actually went up and looked online, and it indeed was originally aired on December 16th. But back in the 50s, early Christmas shopping was December 16th, not October 10th. I think to a point, what might be killing Christmas is this itself, is it's not special anymore. It's a 2-month extravaganza where, you know, by the time I get to Christmas, you know, I don't want to see another Christmas ad. I don't want to see a Christmas tree. I don't want to see a wreath. I just kind of want to get through the holiday and be done with it. What do you think?
Wow, that's crazy. December 16th. Oh, we're doing some early Christmas shopping.
Early Christmas shopping.
People would get ridiculed. You're not shopping till December 16th? What are you doing?
Yeah. Where's your Christmas tree? Your Christmas tree. And don't you dare call it a holiday tree. Your Christmas tree needs to be up now. No, it was Dragnet, so it was Los Angeles,
mm-hmm.
And that was just in some early. We got out into the crowd of some early Christmas shoppers on December 16th. That's nuts, especially when you see how out of control it is today. Yes. And people just don't, I just don't think people give thanks anymore.
No, they don't. And well, you got all these stores, it's called Black Friday for a reason. It's what puts them in the black at the end of the year. And if they don't meet those profit margins, well, they're making less money or getting fired.
I've seen their earning reports. They're in the black well before that Friday.
Well, they're very true, very true.
They're well in the black.
But they have to meet their little requirements. Yeah, well, you were profitable last year. Well, now you got to be more profitable this year.
No, we gambled. What it is we gambled on the stock market that our return rate on our stock, our shares were going to be 3 cents. And if they're 2 cents, well, everyone gets fired because we decided to gamble. You know, I don't think that's a solid business model, if you ask me. Thanksgiving for me is such a, we are talking about, because I think one of the reasons this came up is that we were talking about the fact that, yeah, it's the 8th of, it's the 8th of November, and I haven't seen any Thanksgiving ads yet. I haven't seen anything about Thanksgiving at all, and we're talking about, okay, who all we're going to invite on over. By the way, Brett, FYI, you know, if you have no other place to go, I would gladly have you in my house with me.
Such a ringing invitation.
No seconds. No. No, I mean, Brett, of course, you, Patrick, you're more than welcome to come over. And that's up to you guys. But, you know, that's what we're going through. But it kind of is like, it feels like it's already, well, to a point, it feels like it's Thanksgiving's already gone. Because it just, you know, it doesn't, you don't see anything. You don't see it anymore. And I mean, I guess maybe I'm maybe being a Charlie Brown fatalist, you know, where, you know, like Charlie Brown Christmas, where we don't have the true meaning of Christmas anymore. Well, yeah, I'll go with you. Charlie Brown was on to something back then because he was exactly right. It's consumerism wrapped in this thin veil of religious holiday. But I will make the point on the other side of it, though, that I think that it's hard because I think that the reason why our the powers that be decided to have a Thanksgiving holiday was because it was worth our while to give thanks. And yeah, people just do people really think about that and give thanks? I mean, is it more than just 5 seconds at looking at the turkey going, I'm thankful, football game, or I'm thankful, shopping, get the tree down.
Or this is why I voted for Trump. That too. If it's a Thanksgiving.
It's a Thanksgiving. Hey, I got news for you. Brandon kicked his butt. Just FYI, if you're ever wondering, Brandon still won, you sore freaking losers. Hey, happy holidays. 9-5-2.
That would be a good shirt. Brandon still won.
Brandon still kicked your ass. Just happy holidays. I'd be all for that outside of, you know, that you already know the troglodytes with the dragon knuckles would be sitting there saying, there's like, he's challenging us. We're getting, we can't let the old libs own us. Yeah, no. Yeah, you sure look like a band of swell folks. Just why don't you do some more swearing in secret? 952-946-6205. Give thanks this year. If you get the chance, give some thanks. It's we've got what's looking at the AccuWeather calendar right now. It's 2.5 weeks. 2.5. The 25th is Thanksgiving Day. 2.5 weeks. And now I've got friends like Lisa, who's listening to the show, who's out saying I shop all year long. It's not about, you know, if you see something, great. But maybe just, can we give a holiday a chance? Can we give a holiday a chance? You know, I don't have, you know, I don't have George Bailey running down the street saying, save me a drumstick. No, I don't have that. But we can give thanks. Just remember Thanksgiving. It is a good holiday indeed. And maybe it has gotten steamrolled.
Maybe we could save Thanksgiving and just move it to April or May, move Halloween to like June, and just give Christmas the last 6 months of the year. Solve everything.
Well, first of all, Halloween cannot be on any other day outside of October 31st. It's kind of a must. I will say, would I be against moving Thanksgiving? I don't know if I would be against that. I mean, we do have, you know, May is kind of open, and it's nicer weather. I mean, September is really wide open. You don't have any, I mean, outside of Labor Day, you don't have anything at all in September.
We're giving corporate America too many ideas coming up with this, saying move Thanksgiving to the spring. They're looking at dollar signs if we do this.
That was always my intent. Yeah, let's say Thanksgiving by basically becoming an orgy of Santa. Yes. Oh, by the way, don't ever put orgy and Santa together in one image. No, 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 no. Red nose? No, no, no. I don't. No. Just stop. Just stop. It's like Santa Con. I can't watch anymore. 952-946-6205. 952. Would you be okay with moving Thanksgiving? I actually, that's a legit question. Would you be okay with moving Thanksgiving to a different time of the year? I mean, you could pop it in September, and I think people would be very grateful to have a 4-day weekend in September. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. And by the way, and people would get the day off. You wouldn't have, I mean, even if it be September, I don't think you would ever get famous last words. I don't think you'd get Christmas creeping that early into fall that you would actually have people being able to take the day and be thankful. I like this idea. This is all Brett's idea. I'm going to say, if you hate it, get mad at him. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, someone sent me this. The divide on COVID in red states versus blue states is crazy. In October of this year, 25 out of every 100,000 residents in heavily Trump counties died from COVID, three times higher than the rate of heavily Biden counties, which was 7.8% per 100,000. October is the fifth consecutive month where the percentage gap between the death rates of Trump counties and Biden counties widened. So once again, I want to make sure we understand this. 3 times as many people in conservative areas are dying from COVID than there are from more progressive Democratic areas. I mean, if you need any other reason why you need to go on out there, if you're a Republican politician particularly, and say, hey, okay, enough's enough. Let's make sure we fix this problem. And please, come on. Please. Less than 24 hours after St. Paul voters approved one of the country's most stringent rent control policies, Nicole Goodman's phone started to ring. Developers were calling to tell the city's director of planning and economic development they were placing projects on hold, putting hundreds of new housing units at risk. We don't want our equity goals to be at odds with our growth goals, Goodman said in a presentation to the city council on Wednesday. The ordinance was as written may actually put those goals at odds. Voters' decision on Tuesday, a cap rent increases at 3%, sent developers into a frenzy, prompting some with stakes in Minnesota's capital city to pause projects and reconsider sites for future housing. Unlike most cities with rent control, St. Paul will not exempt new construction, which opponents argue will force lenders to develop and developers to look outside the city for spots where they feel more confident they will be able to recoup investment and earn profits. We, like everybody else, are reevaluating what, if any, future business activity we'll be doing in St. Paul, said Jim Stolpsted, who has worked on developments in St. Paul for 30 years as a founder of Exeter, the company behind major projects like Grand Avenue's revamped retail corridor and new luxury apartments on Cathedral Hill neighborhood. It's a sobering prospect as major developments, including Hillcrest Golf Club and Boys Totem Town sites, either critical planning stages. At the Highland Bridge site, where construction is well underway, Ryan Companies was scheduled to submit 3 building plans to the city this week, but Tony Baracco, Ryan's North Regional President, said Wednesday those reviews have been postponed indefinitely in light of the referendum outcome. Ryan Companies warned before Election Day that the rent control ordinance could prevent them from finding investors for the 760 affordable housing units the city pledged to bring into the former Ford site. Okay. First of all, I want to make sure we say something here. No one's saying that a developer can't make a profit off of a site. It seems, though, that if they can't make a certain level of profit, that is enough for them to get away from funding projects, helping out, you know, and working in community, which I got to admit, I'm not a big fan of. Supporters of rent control led by Grassroots Coalition that petitioned to put the ordinance out on the ballot say developers are making empty threats. This happens in every city where new regulations are passed because they want to scare a city into changing the ordinance, says Tram Hong, a campaign manager for Housing Equity of Now St. Paul, which led the ballot measure push. Ramsey County Commissioner Trista Mattis-Callisto, who voted for rent control, says she believes St. Paul's population and need for development will eventually win out. I don't think development will stall, but there'll be some kinks that need to get worked out. You're not going to be able to take Woodbury and turn Woodbury into the new St. Paul. I mean, I've been in communities. I think the most common one is Des Moines, where I have been there, and because, well, in the case of Des Moines, I would say it was scared white people. The majority of the development in that town does not happen in Des Moines, or at least it didn't when I was down there. It happens over in the west suburbs of Urbandale and West Des Moines. Is it Clive is out there as well?
Oh, as someone who used to work radio down there as little as 10 years ago, that's absolutely true, and probably more so when even you were there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big suburb at this point, essentially.
And it's almost to a point of matching the downtown. And, I mean, eventually people were talking back then if they did not go on out there and, you know, basically do things to preserve the downtown, that they were actually going to see the Des Moines proper become West Des Moines proper, and Des Moines would be a suburb of West Des Moines at that point. I don't think, if you think that there you're going to be able to scare people into saying, well, Woodbury is going to be there. I don't think Woodbury wants to be that, first of all. Don't get me wrong. Woodbury has been very, I like Woodbury. Woodbury has been very smart about their growth. They've developed very wisely. But I don't think they want to be the new downtown of the East Side. I don't think as well that you're going to see any of the suburbs over there, over on the East Side, who want to jump in on that Rosemont or anything like that. I don't think they will. I don't think they will. Anyway. I don't know. I mean, it's, you're going to make profit. So the question comes in, it's like, oh, if you're not going to make enough profit, so you're just going to walk away from job sites, you're going to walk away from the potential. Are you going to try to turn one of these other communities into a viable competitor to St. Paul? Is that what you're saying? North St. Paul or South St. Paul or West St. Paul? You're going to try to make one of them the new St. Paul? I don't know if that's going to work. But the reality is that there, and I'll say this every time, and this was the same thing I said when we had the minimum wage discussion in Minneapolis, when all the people that were against it saying, you're going to shut down every restaurant, you're going to shut down every store, no one's wanting, you're all going, yeah, how's that gone for you? Oh, that's right, nothing like that ever happened. As a matter of fact, Minneapolis has got a lot of great restaurants in it, got a lot of great stores in it. It seems to have weathered the minimum wage increase pretty darn well, indeed. So I at the same time, I on one side of this, I'm a little bothered by the fact that this seems to be a case for you know, whether or not you're making enough profit. I don't know if that's, I get it. I mean, maybe that's where we're at today. So, you know, it's like, I'm not going to develop this land because I think I can make more money over here developing that land. Well, that's fine. Doesn't mean you're not going to make a profit. Doesn't mean you're not going to make a good profit. And I don't know. Are we looking at the difference between obscene profits and good profits, or good profits and just minimal profits? I don't know what the difference is. But I do know that tomorrow you may want to stop development, but I guarantee you it will be a boon for a lot of small builders who all of a sudden will look at all these sites that are suddenly available in the second largest city in the state of Minnesota and will gladly go in tomorrow and start building the apartments that you you think are not worth your time anymore. And that's the truth. So you may want to, you know, for saving face after the election, go out there and say you're going to stall it. But there's going to come a point for you. Either you develop these land and make some money off of it, or you basically just hand it over to other people and smaller construction sites and let them do it, because someone's going to do it. And the last time I checked is that you're not in the business of turning away work. But still, that's just me. Let's go to Michael really quick. Michael is in Shakopee. He wanted to chime in on Santa. Welcome on in, Michael.
Hello, Matt. So I can speak with some authority, being an actual Santa Claus,
okay,
to the effect that people have allowed their notions about what Christmas is and how sacrosanct it might be to cloud reality. And the simple truth is, when you go back and study the history of Christmas, you quickly find out that it has little to nothing to do with the child born in Judea. The date itself is horse trading. You know, Jesus was not born on December 25th any more than you or I were. So people have allowed this idea to be, easily manipulated into a marketing tool. I mean, there are people, for crying out loud, who believe that Santa Claus was invented by the Coca-Cola company.
Well, and so, it does, Michael, come down to the point where I think that you get to, that it feels like there's a lot of people that act like you have to win Christmas, that unless your house is more decorated, that you're buying more expensive gifts, that you're building up more debt, that you're basically sacrificing family time for shopping, that you're not winning Christmas. And that, I think, is also a big crime.
And this is very, very true. By example, in Japan, the Christmas is not a religious holiday at all. It's basically a 30-day opportunity to drink a lot and outdo your fellow employees at giving gifts to your boss. You know, they've completely taken the context of religion out of it, and it's just this huge, you know, winter celebration. And I know that people in the Americas are never going to embrace that idea, but I do agree with you. Even though I am very much a professional Santa Claus, the fact that we start Christmas before Halloween is done is disconcerting.
Michael, thank you very much. I appreciate the phone call. Call back anytime. All right. I'll tell you what, I'm going to share a thought on that when I do come on back. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205, plus more stories to get to as well. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. You know, one of the things, and this was at least the case when I was stationed in the military overseas in Nuremberg. And if you've ever gone to Nuremberg, Germany, during the holidays, they have a Christmas market down there in their main square on the bottom of the hill below the main castle there. It's exceptional. The Glühwein there is magnificent. It's a lot of really cool handcrafted stuff. Very, you know, it's very European, very German. But it brings in a lot of tourists that they do have out there, but they only run it for the 4 weeks running up to Christmas. So it's, you know, even there, even though I don't remember, I don't think Germany had a Thanksgiving holiday per se. I'm pretty sure of that. They, at least not in the same realm as us, is that they basically did it for the 4 weeks leading up to Christmas. So it had been after, even the Germans kind of, it's like, okay, enough's enough. And one of the things I remember was, they apparently would tell retail stores that they, you know, and I mean, German economy is different than the American economy, but they frowned very significantly on German businesses trying to run holiday specials and holiday deals that were counter the Christmas market. Because that brought in tourism over December, which is not an easy thing to do in a lot of places, trust me. The fact that they were able to get so many people that would come to Nuremberg for the holidays was a great deal. And so they were very hesitant to allow the shopping complex outside of the city center to start running deals, 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 you know, that sort of thing. And not saying that some didn't. I remember some did. It just, it was very different than here, where it is quite literally a mugging of your senses. A few years ago, I wrote up on the blog about the war on Christmas, and I just went out, and it was a December day, December morning. I went outside, and I walked through my town of Hopkins, and I pointed out all the holiday trees that were in all the official buildings, even though it's not a Christmas tree, it's a holiday tree. Okay, sure thing. The wreaths that are up on all the street posts, which is, it's nice. And everywhere you looked, it was just an overwhelming amount of Christmas. And then as I'm walking back to my car, it was a cold day, I remember that. As I'm walking back to the car, the church in town, all of a sudden starts playing Christmas carols. And I just, you know, it's war on Christmas. No, Christmas kicked everyone else's caboose years ago. This is more of a victory celebration. And you're basically just saying, no, we're not going to have 30 seconds of the celebratory wine. We're only going to have 31 servings of it. And some guys over there saying, how dare you? Really? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Thanks, Santa. I appreciate the call. Lisa making the point, we're talking earlier about the construction companies now that are apparently telling St. Paul, you know what? No, we're not going to build. We're going to pull back on some development stuff like this. And I said, you know, all right, fine. You're going to, and that's fine. I mean, I don't know if the design of the company is saying, hey, we'll take obscene profits, not great profits. Or is it, we'll only take great profits, not bare minimum profits. I don't know. The reality is no one's saying you have to build a building at a loss. So the reality is, and I think we can all understand that you need to charge rent, or if it's going to be a townhome or a condo situation, that you need to sell these at a returnable rate. I get that. But anyone that's out there saying, oh, well, it's going to threaten things. I brought up the minimum wage argument in Minneapolis, and how everyone said every business is going to leave. Every business is going to leave. And it's so incensed the Republicans that they're trying desperately. The outstate Republicans are still trying to, the same outstate Republicans who keep yelling at the metro area to keep your nose out of our local business. They can't help but stick their freaking schnozzes into Minneapolis and try to stop them by trying to pass rules saying you can't have a minimum wage different than the state's minimum wage. Oh, by the way, we're never going to pass an increase, that sort of thing. Lisa brings up the same thing with the smoking ban. I remember that. When you put in some smoking bans, I remember people saying, well, all they're going to do is leave. Well, first of all, as a person that really does not like cigarette smoke, bye, so long. I don't think it's hurt them nearly as much as the threat has. They said they're going to. 952-946-6205. Two stories here. I'm going to preface them by saying this. I love teachers. Teachers are, you know, teachers and nurses are absolute brilliance. They're absolute brilliance. And these two stories here are going to actually about two teachers. I don't know what the story is here. But they're not good stories. I will say this. I don't think it's a coincidence that both of these school districts where these stories happened are in outstate Minnesota. Let me just put it that way. Where they're already having problems. I've talked about this. They're having problems filling staff at some of these schools. And I said, have you guys thought of being nice to the teachers? You know, you're destroying my kids with critical race theory, mask mandates. You are going to die. Why doesn't anyone want to come and work in our schools? I don't know. It's a mystery of the ages, isn't it? It's a mystery of the ages. Hey, how about you be nice to them? I don't even think that's a possibility anymore. But that's just, I think that's kind of where it is. Here you go. And once again, though, I really stand by teachers. I think teachers are brilliant. And so this is I'm bringing these up hesitantly. A high school teacher is accused of screaming at a student, then pulling her up from the floor by her ankles after she'd fallen to the ground. Eric Kaufman, a physical education teacher at New Ulm High School, was charged in Brown County District Court last week on three counts: malicious punishment of a child, a gross misdemeanor, fifth-degree assault, and disorderly conduct, both misdemeanors. The criminal charges stem from an October 14th incident when three students told the school resource officer they saw a teacher putting his hands on a student. Obviously, a very, very serious allegation. You have to do a full investigation right away. The teacher, according to the charges, was Kaufman, who prosecutors say yelled at and grabbed a female student who was resting in the weight room, a confrontation that left her crying and visibly shaken. The charges cite accounts from student witnesses and the victim, as well as security camera footage from inside the weight room. Kaufman is on paid administrative leave pending the investigation. We are unaware of the criminal complaints against him. That is a separate process from our school investigation, New Ulm Public School Superintendent Jeff Bertang stated. As our investigation is ongoing, we have no additional information we can share. The New Ulm Police Department, when asked for information it could share regarding the incident outlined in the charges, said currently it has no public data pertaining to that request. Well, that seems to be basically trying to keep things quiet. The criminal complaint against Kaufman was filed on November 4th. First court appearance is on November 23rd at 8:30 a.m. Here's allegedly what happened. The school resource officer got word of a teacher putting his hands on the student. He and the school's principal spoke with three students who were in the class. The student witnesses said they entered the weight room after stretching and saw Kaufman approach another student who was on a weight bench doing an exercise incorrectly. The students say they heard Kaufman say something to the lines of, "Don't blank me off today." He then went over to the girl and grabbed her arms to change her technique. After that, they watched Kaufman turn around and confront a separate female student who was resting on a weight bench. He approached, yelling and making screaming noises. The student said as he got close to the student, fell off the weight bench. At that point, Kaufman grabbed her by the ankles and lifted her up by the legs off the floor. What are you doing? After being pulled up by the ankles, she got up and went to her friends nearby. The student witnesses described the whole thing as awkward and said the victim was crying and visibly upset. The school resource officer spoke to the student, who corroborated the account of Kaufman's comments and interactions with the other students lifting weights incorrectly. The student said that she kept pulling away from Kaufman as he approached, causing her to fall off the weight bench. She was not injured, and she retreated to her friends. She said one told her, "Watch out," and she realized Kaufman was following her. Security footage provides another view of the incident. Kaufman can be seen grabbing the victim's face and appears to be yelling. As this happens, the student is cowering and clearly uncomfortable about the situation. The video shows her fall off, shows Kaufman grab her by the ankles, and shows Kaufman follow her until she reaches a group of friends. The conviction on malicious punishment for a child and carries a sentence of up to a year and or a $3,000 fine. The two other charges carry sentences up to 90 days and $1,000. Yikes. First of all, yikes. I don't know what kind of day Kaufman was having, but dude, if your life is going in that kind of a bad direction, might I say you might not want to be there. I actually kind of almost wonder, from what was described and what was described in the video, was there something else going on? Was there alcohol? Was it steroids? Was there something else going on that would explain any of this? Might have been just he was having a bad, bad day and just couldn't keep it under control and just lost it. But, you know, I can't believe that this individual is going to be seeing the inside of working in the inside of a school ever again, at least from the allegations I've heard against them. Everyone deserves their day in court, but also, a school staffer is reportedly under investigation after hitting a student in southeast Minnesota. KAAL-TV reports that a staff member at the Zimbrota Mazeppa School District in Goodhue County is on administrative leave and has been under investigation since Monday, according to the district superintendent, Michael Harvey. The video of the alleged incident has been shared on social media. The five-second clip appears to show a teacher hitting a student over the head once with a rolled-up paper. The audio is difficult to hear, but it sounds like the staff member saying, "You know what's funny? Me beating you, whack-a-mole." The Bring Me the News guys reached out to the district, and Harvey has for confirmation in a statement and will update the story. Meanwhile, the Minnesota Department of Education did not confirm or deny it has received a complaint about the alleged incident. They investigate allegations of maltreatment of students by school staff. Whether or not the Minnesota Department of Education received a maltreatment complaint related to this incident, and whether or not Minnesota Department of Education has determined maltreatment occurred, is a private data until investigation closes and a final determination is issued. No further information has been posted. At least from the sounds of it. Well, let me make sure I preface it by saying, No, you shouldn't be whacking students on their head with a newspaper or a roll. The days of you doing that are... I was a kid. Okay, so when I was a kid, I was at Wickford Elementary School in Wickford, Rhode Island. Go fighting Quahogs. I was out there, and I remember walking into the gym. We would go down to gym, and I was like a first grader. And the gym teacher had a hockey stick and a plastic hockey puck. And he would sit there, and he had a bunch of plastic hockey pucks. And he would sit there as we would come down, and we'd walk down the steps by the stage. And where we had gym was in the cafeteria area when we weren't outside. And as we came kind of running down the steps next to the stage onto the floor of the cafeteria area at Wickford Elementary School, he would sit with his hockey stick and fling plastic pucks at us. And it stung. I mean, he tagged me a few times. It stung. I remember that to this day. I remember the gym teacher basically abusing us back in the 70s, and no one batted an eye. It's toughen you up. Toughen you up. That's what we're doing. And if I had gone out there and complained about it, I can't imagine that they would have taken, the gym teacher has a right to beat you with a hockey stick. I'm just going to let you know. That's just that's in their contract. That was then. We know more today. We know enough today to not get into this situation where you're doing this. Of the two incidences, obviously, the grabbing the student by the ankles and dangling her upside, also grabbing their face, what was that? You can see getting in the victim's face appear to be yelling at that. That one case up in Newholm, that is god-awful. This one in Goodview County at Zimbrota Mazeppa, it's bad, and the teacher clearly is out of line, but, it's comparatively, it's not as bad as the other one, but still... Come on, those days, the day and age of that being anything that's allowed in anyone's school district, we should know that those days are over. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. From our earlier Thanksgiving conversation, Ron making the comment, how about two Thanksgiving days each year? First of all, Ron, I'm all for that because I just like to eat. But I will also say, let's not give them any ideas, shall we? I think that if they can consumerize anything, they will go for that. So, Sandra making the point, I like the idea of Thanksgiving in September. You can still celebrate the harvest and be thankful. I like the idea of September. I like just getting the idea of making Thanksgiving a holiday again as opposed to a speed bump on the way to the mass consumerism that's known as Christmas. And I say this as I'm a very religious person. I'm actually far more religious. I've learned that I'm far more religious than I thought I was. And I believe one of the reasons I am a progressive is because of my religious faith, hands down. But it does sometimes make me scratch my head. It's like, what would the world be like? Would it be like a Hallmark TV channel come to life? I mean, you know, celebrating Christmas in July and June, what would be the people, the world be like for the people who scream that the war on Christmas is going on when this is already what we've got? And for some of them, it would be forced Christmas trees. It would be making people worship a religion that's not theirs. I don't know. But idea of at least maybe taking Thanksgiving back might not be the worst idea. Robert is in Columbia Heights, wanting to chime in on chip teachers. Robert, thanks for holding. Welcome onto the show.
Yeah, hi, Matt. I think being a masochist is number one or two on the list for Phi Ed teachers.
At least it used to be. At least it used to be.
Yes. In the wintertime up in Duluth, we would stay inside most of the time. And the Phi Ed teacher would make us run around the basketball court. And if you cut the corners, he had upperclassmen, juniors and seniors, who would throw real footballs at us. And, you know, supposedly only hit us in the body to make us stop cutting corners. But, yeah, they're mean.
Thanks, Robert. Dear Lord. Dear Lord, my guess is a threat of a lawsuit. Stop that practice. That would be my guess. Thanks. I appreciate the phone call. I swear, and I wish my dad was still around because I'd call him up and ask him. I swear that he told me the story one time. This didn't happen in Virginia where he went to school, but this back up in those days in one of the surrounding communities up on their Iron Range, there was a gym teacher. They used to put on skates and you could go out and you know, just skate around, or you could get into a game. They would actually, during their gym time, you could lace on the skates and go out and play hockey, although it wasn't apparently, you know, it wasn't pads or heavy duty pads or helmets or anything like this. It was also back in the days when safety equipment was kind of optional or non-existent. Face maskless goalies. Yes. You can always tell which player on the team is the goalie. But my dad said to me one time that he'd heard a story of at a high school there on the range back. So this has got to be late 30s, maybe mid, right around 1940s, where the gym teacher, who was a younger guy, had them out playing gym. They were playing hockey, and one of the guys scored on him. The gym teacher apparently didn't like it and started opening fist fight with one of the students on the ice and didn't get fired. And you're like, what? You just got upset about a goal and you didn't get fired. You did not get fired back then. That is called a policy with some leeway. I'm kind of grateful when people say it's like, I like the good old days. You know what? The good old days had a lot of bad, man. I'm okay with the modern life. I'm okay with the modern world and having some standards where that sort of thing is not good. Native Roots Radio, I am awake. That is coming up next. Have a fantastic Monday. Till tomorrow. See ya.